for the Last American Vagabond. Thank you for joining me today. I have a special broadcast, a special guest joining me today that you'll be happy to see. For an impromptu live stream we're going to do about some great research that he's working on today in regard to the UN Food Summit, in regard to the Great Reset, and of course, the Activation Tour. And joining us today for a special interview that you can see here is Derek Brose from our new setup here. How is everybody today? How are you?
What's up? Yeah, we're actually in the same room. We're going to at least show that.
Yeah, right. Actually had a couple of weird issues with the technological setup, but we're doing it sort of on a Zoom setup here today, but we will be broadening this out. Hopefully we'll have more people coming in studio to discuss this stuff, but it's nice to have you actually here in the studio. So we can actually high five, you know?
I'm going to do a short interview / just kind of get to visit the T-Lab studio. So I'll share that
pretty soon.
You guys can check a little bit more behind the scenes where we're at.
Right. Yeah. I've only given a couple of small tours around the area here, so we can do that as we go forward. But yeah, it's nice to have you in the studio because it's nice to actually have, you know, an in-person conversation with people, you know, as we go back to the wrong camera. But yeah, it's important that the discussion around the Activation Tour, which is really one of the things we're going to talk about today, at least for the part that we're doing in Franklin here, is about telling people that you're not alone, right? You're not alone. There's plenty of people out there that think like you do, that believe like you do, that understand things that you do. And so it's really important that we continue to show people that you're not alone, that you're in a community. In fact, I keep arguing that possibly the majority, if not a lot more than they want you to think. And so it's kind of an interesting thing there that I want people to see. But we're going to talk about a lot of things today, including something that Derek's been researching around the UN Food Summit. And now I've talked with Christian from the Ice Age Farmer, and you guys have been really interested in the topic of food infrastructure, as I have myself, and how that relates to COVID-19. So we're going to have some interesting talk about that today. So let's get into that, and you can, you know, walk us through some of the stuff that you've seen.
We're going to talk about the Activation Tour. I've been on the road, so I've been somewhat unplugged from everything that's going on. I mean, I'm keeping up with what you're
sharing about and
sort of watching a little bit, but what's been catching my eye in recent weeks and now that it's here this past week
and it might even still be going on this week is the UN Food Summit. You know, I was reading about how that it was going to be coming up in September, and clearly we know that the Great Reset Agenda 2030, is all about It's about redesigning all the systems, food included, supply chain. People have been paying attention to the supply chain disruptions. We've talked about the cyber pandemic, all those different aspects. And as I am traveling the country and doing the Activation Tour, I can definitely say that that's one of the most prominent things on people's minds right now is food. How do I grow my own food? What are the steps I need to take to be prepared? Specifically in regards to vaccine passports, people are thinking like, okay, well, if in France they're being denied the right to go to the grocery store for not being vaccinated, what do I do if that happens to me and my family? How are we going to make sure we're getting food? And most of the people in the modern Western world, for lack of a better term, are dependent on the grocery stores. There's still a lot of parts of the world that are farming people and kind of have those opportunities. But especially in the U.S., most of that has been outsourced. And so the average person is going to be in a position where they're dependent on the food, the big markets and the big stores to show them where to get their food at. So in the face of the Great Reset, where they're talking about redesign and everything, they're talking about smart cities, they're talking about social credit scores and everything that we know is coming, people really need to think concretely, and I'm trying to encourage people to think concretely about what do you do in those positions. And so my mind's already kind of been going to that place. And then I see the UN Food Summit coming up, and of course, the United Nations is deeply tied to this whole agenda. We're going to talk more about Agenda 2030, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which is where all this really springs from. And the United Nations is a partner with the World Economic Forum in the Great Reset. So there's just so much here that I figured, okay, this UN Food Summit is probably going to be something to keep an eye on. And the more that I've started digging, as I'm going to share here today, there definitely are people calling it out for being essentially just a corporate greenwash in this case. Where it's, you know, all the same people who are responsible for the Green Revolution, which brought us pesticides and GMOs and monocropping and depleted soil and all that.
That's a big one.
They're the same people that are talking about the food.
Well, the point that we were kind of touching on before when we talked about this, it's not necessarily just that they're part of it. That's obviously important, but that they have failed thus far, right? Like whether we're talking about the GMOs in India or, you know, all these different discussions, they have not only failed to meet their mark, but we've shown, especially the GMO discussion, they've in fact gone the opposite direction. Exactly. And yet these are the same people stepping in going, hey, here's a new solution. Really what's interesting to me is it's the same exact angle, right? We're they failed in the GMO angle and what they're trying to do in a way that's, you know, what we're seeing in the biosecurity state of this angle for their health, but trying to control your food. And now they're using the health angle once again to circle back and drive in the same agenda they failed at. So Derek is really interested about the UN Food Summit and how, just explaining why these people are clearly connected to that. So you want to go ahead and try and share?
Yeah, I'll share the screen here from on this side. So yeah, thanks guys for rolling with us with the punches here. I want to just first, we'll establish what is the UN Food Summit, right? Some of you might not even be aware this is happening. Let's see if it shows up. Is it going?
Cool. Yeah, go ahead.
So the Food System Summit, as you can see, just took place this past week in New York, September 23rd. And all last week, the United Nations was meeting the General Assembly, as they call it. So you had Biden addressing the world for the first time as president. You had all the different world leaders, most of them doing video because COVID, can't gather in person, right? Or at least that's what they pretend. Maybe they're all in the same room and they're just Skyping.
Well, I mean, you keep seeing these weird, you know, like where their AOC was a big point. Oh, yeah. Look, well, everyone's wearing masks around them, but they're not. And despite the fact that the narrative at the time is that everybody should be. Like, it's run rule for thee, not for me, in every exactly. circumstance right now.
Exactly. So the UN Food Summit, though, was the kind of tail end of the general United Nations General Assembly, which meets yearly. And they did this in New York. And as you go through there, you can see this is the main actual page from the UN. You'll see they call it the People's Summit. The People's Summit has arrived. It's very much being promoted as like, this took 2 years and millions of dollars to bring all these different stakeholders. Of course, they're starting to use that stakeholder verbiage from the Great Reset from the World Economic Forum. So that's just so everybody knows that's happening this week. That's what's going on with the United Nations Summit. I'm going to...
Quick question for you right there. When they say a stakeholder, who are they referring to? As an individual person or as a government?
They pretend like they're like you're a stakeholder, I'm a stakeholder, the indigenous people are stakeholders. That's like the way they promote it. But it's really, it's Monsanto, it's
exactly,
you know,
all that's
the
what I was
players.
Getting at, is that they're making it seem as if it's the individual stakeholder, right? Exactly. So it's the average person growing fruit there, but it's not the case. Is they're using you as a means to control that.
It's 100% how they're trying to frame it. So I'm just going to share my whole window here so we can go into all these articles.
Okay.
So this is a statement that came after the first day of the UN Food System Summit. And I just want to, breeze through it, but UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and for those who've been paying attention, and we'll show the document in a moment, he was a specific partner with Klaus Schwab in the Great Reset. He spoke at the Great Reset event this past year. He's talked all about it, and so we can go here and they make it clear. The UN Food Summit is a historic opportunity to empower all people, to power the food systems, to drive the recovery from COVID pandemic. So they tie it into that.
It blows me away that we're constantly trying to tie. Why does the food system have anything to do with the recovery of the COVID? Like, everything they did was something that their actions created. The food, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. It's how they do it. They engineer the crises and they tell us they got the solutions. So this last part of the sentence, though, so recover from COVID and get us back on track to achieve all 17 sustainable development goals by 2030. And I'll show you a link in just a moment from that Smart Cities article that I wrote a couple months back that kind of explains deeper about, for those who are unaware, what the sustainable development goals are. Because if you're just an average Super person important. And you're new to this and you hear sustainable goals, like, you know,
sounds like a good
it thing. Sounds like, yeah, there's 17 good points. Let's do the food supply better. Let's work with the water. Let's, you know, they have it
right
phrased in that way.
Well, and this is why I think the greater reset that Derek has championed is really important, because what he's doing is showing you that these are things that we should talk about, right? We need to make sure that things are sustainable. Sustainable is not a bad word,
yeah,
but but people kind of are making it a bad word because of that, but they are taking it and driving you in the wrong direction. The idea of the 2030 thing that, again, we were talking about beforehand, I found so interesting is that this is, people have been bringing up Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, the conversation there from the moment this started, and that's being linked as a conspiracy theory, right? Yeah. Oh, that's so silly. And now they're literally linking it and telling you this is part.
It's like, when I saw this, I was like, wow, they're making it clear as day. This is about 2030.
Right.
And we're going to talk about
the same thing, really.
The tour in a little bit. And one of the things I'm saying to people is like, dude, it's 2021. They're talking about 2030. We are in the middle of that decade. They called it the decade of transformation. Mm-hmm. We are watching it happen. So we got to figure out what our position is going to be. So there's a couple points I will note here. Again, they're going to use the language of inclusivity, diversity. They want to create an inclusive and transformative food systems to nourish progress to achieve zero hunger. Now, again, that sounds like a good goal, but it's all about how they achieve it, right? Do you have choices in that system that is all about equity and you know, solving world hunger? Or does it mean you get to be told by the United Nations what you could eat every year? You know, and I want to just kind of add a point. I see a couple of the comments here talking about that and the vegan aspect of it. This is something that I just, because we're talking about food and it's so intrinsic to it. I actually started an activist group recently. We're going to launch this soon. It's called Vegans for Freedom. That is about this specific issue. How, and this is not to convince anybody to be vegan, but specifically for me as a vegan, recognizing that there are so many people who become vegan because of climate change, mm-hmm. what I would consider propaganda, and have been told like it's for the environment. So to me, I'm a vegan because I care about animals. That's my moral choice. Not here to shame anybody else. Right. But these other folks, they're coming into it because they're being guilted into it. It's bad right. for the planet if you keep doing this. It's doing, you know.
You can't miss the crossover of that to COVID-19. The same thing, oh, right?
Exactly. It's the same messaging, right? So then the other aspect of that is you have the Bill Gates-funded Beyond Burger, Impossible Burger. As a vegan, as we're traveling the country, we go out to eat. We're seeing it more and more, right? I was telling you this earlier. But we, our veganism is a whole food plant-based diet, like, you know, so we're not eating Beyond Burgers and right. Impossible Burger, 3D printed burgers and genetic engineered burgers. And so the Vegans for Freedom kind of, I guess, movement, if you will, that we're trying to speak for is say, hey, we're vegans who care about animals, but we reject Agenda 2030. And I think it's right, a very right. important like flag to kind of plant, because many of us in the vegan movement are truth activists as mm-hmm. well as like vegans. But then you're seeing this whole host of other people who they've bought COVID-19 stuff. They believe in Agenda 2030, right. but they're vegan, but they're, you know, they might be the kind of people who would eat the bugs and eat the Bill Gates burgers. But I just want to make that distinction that there are people for one reason or another who choose to be vegan or whatever their diet is, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're buying into the COVID right. or to the Agenda 2030 propaganda. And just like people who talk about, I'm a permaculturist. I talk about true sustainability and regenerative. That doesn't mean I'm pushing United Nations.
Things, right.
But there's so exactly. many people who have this knee-jerk kind of thing of like, oh, vegan, United Nations propaganda. See, or
this is an interesting point to make right now. And this is, we even talking before all this about like the cryptocurrency kind of thing. Same thing is that there's there's an interesting thing happening now where people are just like blacking things out across the board. Like vegan is bad because it connects in any remote way to this. Right. And it's like, well, you know, there's a discussion to be had around whether you think veganism is the right thing to do or not. And that's a personal choice. Exactly. But at the end of the day, it doesn't mean you support everything that everybody associates with veganism. It doesn't make sense to think that way, but that's the absolute world we live in today. It's this or it's that. It's black or it's white. It's polarization. And that's what they want with all of it, you know? And I would even argue that the impossible meat and all this stuff, that's like the cheating version of being a vegan, right? I
mean, it's and that's even in like the vegan world, right? When somebody's like, hey, I'm going to transition to vegetarianism or this and that. Those are like the cheat stuff that helps you get comfortable with it because it's frozen. You can pop it in the oven or whatever, right? And then eventually, hopefully you start eating healthier, right? Because that is just like, it's vegan junk food, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also like, nobody really knows what's in the Impossible Burger. Nobody really knows what's in the
exactly the point,
right? Beyond Burgers and stuff. But we are seeing them pop up more and more. So I just wanted to kind of address that side point that while we're talking about food, whatever your dietary choice is, I believe you should have a choice. And that's what we're basically saying to other vegans is like, hey, we should be vegan. We can talk to people about why we think that's the moral choice, but we shouldn't be calling for the governments to ban meat and tell other people what
and
to do.
And force them how to eat. Exactly.
So that's not at all where I'm coming from. Right. If you want to pop in on
And while we're doing this, before I do that, since we're doing this a little impromptu and unorthodox, if you guys have questions in the chat, since we're doing this, feel free and reach out because we'll try to engage with the chat this time and let you know our thoughts on different questions you may have. So let us know.
Just again, we'll skip this document just a second, but I wanted to point out here how they say food systems are shaping progress in three fundamental areas. And they always have their catchphrases, right? So people, nourishing everyone for health and well-being, planet, producing in harmony with nature, prosperity, inclusive, transformative, equitable recovery for the 2030 agenda. Like, I mean, they could not be making it clear that this is the decade they are seeking to transform the food systems.
Right.
And it's all about the sustainable development goals and climate change. And it kind of all reconnects. So that's just, this is from the United Nations themselves. That's like a statement from them themselves. And this one, just to kind of bring in it a little bit so you know it's the same people. This is from Farm Progress. UN Food Summit targets ending hunger, creating resiliency. They promote it in a positive way. Here's all the world leaders masked up together, right? United Nations Food Summit kicks off. The only point I want to make here is that they quote from a certain man that if you don't know his name, you need to learn his name. Where is he at? Okay, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and USAID, you know them, they're connected to the CIA. That's often how the CIA uses to overthrow governments through aid from USAID. Samantha Power joined UN Secretary General Guterres and global partners at the Food Systems Summit on Thursday. So why does that matter? Who the heck is Tom Vilsack? Let's go to the next one here. Some of you might remember this. This guy literally is nicknamed Mr. Monsanto. This is who Biden chose as his agricultural secretary. This was last year when he hadn't been chosen yet. He's now the secretary. He's representing the United States at the UN Food Summit. This dude worked his entire career with Monsanto. And he's been around before. I think he was around during the bomb administration as well. And he's just, he has such a deep history that that's literally the nickname that they give him. So just to show you that the guy that they put in place during the Biden administration, working under the as the Secretary of Agriculture, is known as Mr. Monsanto and is now at the UN Food Summit representing the country.
So why is he known as Mr. Monsanto? Did he work for Monsanto? What's the point?
He has a long history. So here, Vilsack, they give a little bit here. He's held the position of Secretary of Agriculture during the Obama administration, and Obama was deeply tied to the Monsanto through what was the lawyer? Clarence Thomas. No, not Clarence Thomas. I can't remember the name at the top of my head. But he was Iowa's governor from 99 to 2007. If you know anything about Iowa, Iowa grows a lot of corn. Monsanto's got their hands in Syngenta all in Iowa for the GMO cornfields. And he also has just a history of working with them, getting funding from them. He expedited the approval process for GMOs when he was the governor. He promoted the use of GMOs. You know, he helped create a bill that would replace Vermont's labeling standards, basically trying to make it more difficult for people to know if foods do contain GMOs. And he also helped promote glyphosate.
Right. You know. What I find interesting is it doesn't seem to be any exact connection to Monsanto, yet it's almost like a derogatory name. So, you know, I almost noticed this where they're giving him that name as a way to associate him with these things. But it's almost, it's like a negative thing, but that's coming from the mainstream. So it's like they secretly, not even secretly, are aware of the bad, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is maybe slightly out of the mainstream. Green Matters is when I found that they're the only ones talking about it. I will say that like the next couple articles came from The Guardian, and there's actually some irony there because the section of The Guardian that's reporting on it is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Of course.
But they don't mention their connection to all of it. But yeah, if you were to look up right now, if anybody wants to go use the CIA Google and search UN Food Summit, you're just going to find all the positive articles about like, oh, world leaders met, convene, they redesign the systems and everything's going to be great. But, you know, I just want to show that, again, he has ties to the dairy industry, animal agriculture. Some would say, yeah, that's the kind of guy we need there fighting for us, you know, because he's more connected than any of us. But
see,
it's more deep than just that. He's got the expertise or
this
whatever.
This is this QAnon argument that's been made, you know, like mostly there. That's why I give it that moniker, that it's sort of like, well, we need the insiders to be able to fight back from within. And sure, that does make sense, but that's an easy way to ignore the fact that you just brought on somebody who's like the villain. You know what I mean? Like, or could be.
And they don't, it's not like they, when those doors close and so he's not working at Monsanto anymore. He doesn't work with Bayer at the moment, but does he not still have them in his phone book contact list? You know, like talking to them on a regular basis, going out for lunch and like,
does he not mentally align with what they do?
He just came from the same industry, right? So here's another one that now we'll kind of get into some of the, I think The Guardian at this point, we could consider them mainstream, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So this is coming from The Guardian, which I thought was interesting, right? The Guardian's from the UK. Why is none of the US media reporting on this? And this was 6 months ago when they were first talking about the UN Food Summit. People were already calling it out. So farmers and rights groups boycott Food Summit over big business links. Again, they're kind of like acknowledging, you see it right there, global development supported by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yeah. So they're talking about the UN Food Summit. This is before it even happened. They were already saying it was becoming clear that indigenous voices, which most of the world's farmers communities, they are peasant farmers in a lot of the what we call third world parts of Mexico and other places, India. You know, of course, the first green revolution, which the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, a lot of these, not the Gates Foundation, but the Rockefeller Foundation more specifically, that they were involved in, is what led to monocropping, the glyphosate, the GMOs and all that. It's led to the high rate of Indian farmer suicides, you know, that people have heard about because they get them indebted because of the Terminator gene in the GMO, you know, all that stuff that people heard about. This is the result of the Green Revolution. So now those same people are coming back and saying, hey, we're going to host a people summit and talk all about how to remake the, and a big part of it, this is how people knew from the beginning it was going to be BS. So Secretary General Guterres appointed Agnes Kalibata. Now, she is a former Rwandan. I think she was even agriculture minister. And she is president of the Gates-funded AGRA, Alliance for Green Revolution in Africa. And if you know anything about them or if you've seen some James Corbett's reporting on that, this is just their little kind of monopoly institution in Africa to bring in all their stuff. You know, oh, we're an alliance for a green revolution. It sounds great. They've been around for 15 years, and nearly everybody in Africa who has studied them and what they've actually produced has seen that they haven't increased yields. They haven't brought more prosperity to the community or any of the farmers. People are suffering more and more, all those things. So that woman who's the head of that organization, funded by the Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, was appointed as the head of the UN Food Summit. And then you also got the Mr. Monsanto's coming from the US. So it's just
Like it's a slap in the face. I mean, this is literally the
opposite. It's a show. It's a complete show.
Well, you got to think about the people, like, you know, the I forget her name. What's the woman from India that's really prolific about speaking out about Bill Gates?
Vandana Shiva.
Right. So, I mean, they've been revealing what's actually been the byproduct or the result of what they've tried to do for so very long. These people are the ones that are suffering. Like, they've lost family members. And then they get told that these same people are now going to be stepping up to save the world. Imagine how insulting exactly. that is for these families.
Well, and that's, I think, why, like, most of our audience is probably based in the U.S. or the Western English-speaking world, right? A lot of us forget about Africa. We're not there. We're not thinking mm-hmm. about it, right? And maybe you just not even, it's like not even an afterthought in your mind. But colonization, I think, is an important point to point out, and somebody else says it in one of the other articles, calling this corporate colonization. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely right. Like, whatever you feel about that particular term, the point is, like, they are continuing to colonize places like Africa, India, et cetera, by taking over their food supply. This is just, right. you know, and this is now they're coming back once more 30 years later to say, hey, we're here to save things again. Like,
it's like food slavery, like debt slavery, right? Same kind of idea. It's like they create a system which you can't break free from, and you're just in, you know, forever needing them now. They destroy your food system, and now you're dependent on his fake meat exactly. and everything else.
Exactly. It's the same practice we've seen with the IMF giving out loans right. to small nations and then taking all the resources when they can't repay it. It's kind of the same thing, but through the food supply. And actually, and we're going to mention this in just a bit, that I'm working on my documentary, The Pyramid of Power. Next season, I just finished working on our last episode, which is called Food as a Weapon, and kind of about some of the things we're talking about here,
right.
but also showing that folks like Henry Kissinger and a lot of this predator class folks have discussed, and they've used food as a weapon during mm-hmm. times of war. Like, even, you don't even have to think about it in the modern era, but think about, like, you come conquer a people, you burn all their crops.
Right,
you
right.
know, you want to make sure they can't produce, they can't harvest, et cetera. It's a way to weaken your people. So if you get to the point where the people see you as the philanthropists and the good guys, and you're here to, they're giving you permission to remake the food supply, you can do whatever the heck you want with it.
Right.
And they never even recognize they're under attack.
And it's funny that Kissinger is one of the people on record of, you know, before, back when we weren't supposed to see these things, talking about sanctions. And, you know, yeah. it's the same idea. It's yeah. like, so these are the very people that are championing this idea. And it's same concept with sanction and everything else. It's about putting you in a position of vulnerability and weakness, and then using that for their own agenda. But the crazy thing about what Derek's talking about is now they're convinced these people that that situation is a positive step. I mean, this is just like social engineering on steroids. It's incredible.
Absolutely. I'll just continue a couple more links mm-hmm. as we're going to get deeper here in just a moment. The reason I'm showing these Guardian ones is I want you to recognize, the listener to recognize, that there is some discussion, but it's being sort of put out there in a way that doesn't give you the full picture, right? So
right.
somebody who's totally new to this, like, oh, wow, maybe this great UN summit is not what I thought it was. It's elitist, it's pro-corporate. Okay, maybe this isn't something I should trust. And they point out the various groups involved, the Gates-funded groups and whatnot, but they don't make it, I think, as clear as one could make it, exactly what we're facing. Do they talk about the Great Reset? No. Do they talk about Agenda 2030? Only in the context of that's what we want to achieve through mm-hmm. through these initiatives. But there have been more than 600 different civil society and activist groups that have signed a petition and made it clear beforehand that they were going to boycott the food summit. They actually set up their own parallel meeting, and it had 148 grassroots groups from 28 countries. It was called the People's Coalition on Food Security, calling for the United Nations to sever their strategic partnership with the World Economic Forum. And this is what I was talking about earlier. Let me see if I got this one pulled up. That a while back, the United Nations announced that they were going to start a brand new deal with the World Economic Forum,
right,
and become one of their partners. You know, we know that the World Economic Forum talks about public-private partnership, right? Well, now right. they're saying that the United Nations is going to work with them together. And the United Nations, even if we take it at face value, is supposed to be ostensibly a way for all the nations to come together to share ideals and visions, not like a takeover of the entire world through world government that it is, but in its best form, it's supposed to represent the people all get to come and share their voices. Obviously, it's far from that. But people who still believe that, even those people are like, what? They're partnering with the World Economic Forum? That's right. not what the United Nations is supposed to be about. So I think this move has helped, you know, wake some folks up, but they're not really getting the deeper picture.
In a way, I feel like it's almost like the World Economic Forum has underestimated the illusion that they presented, right? So this is supposed to be a good thing for the yeah. way they're presenting it, right? We're working, the public-private partnership in and of itself is presented as the solution, right?
Exactly.
But people that are on their side are going like, whoa, wait a minute, because this is a co-opting. This is corporate, like you're making this into something, like the way you described it is how we're supposed to perceive it, right?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
joining with the World Economic Forum makes it a business. And that's the problem. And so it's a public-private partnership. It's helping the new world government.
See, I think, how illegitimate it actually is.
Right.
There's this one quote here from one of the gentlemen who's been speaking out. He says, the boycott of the event by organizations representing millions of people highlighted how regressive the summit is in terms of human rights. And this particular gentleman, he's a journalist, Michael Fockery, who said that this is the most regressive move in the summit's 60-year history. And he's just talking about how, like, they're completely ignoring people. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're just responding. They're like saying, oh, yeah, those are just critics. Don't worry about that. And then again, corporate colonization, small producers boycott UN Food Summit. So the small scale farmers, the indigenous groups, they're seeing through this. They're rightfully calling this out and saying, like, we shouldn't trust Gates. We shouldn't just trust the Rockefellers. We shouldn't trust the United Nations. And that's a positive thing overall. I do want to highlight, look, they organized something. It's from Food Systems for People, People's Autonomous Response to the UN Food Summit. So I don't know that these people who are pushing back would be 100%, you know, aligned on some of the things we're talking about per se, but they're saying the UN should not pursue the agenda of corporate front groups. We should rise up against corporate food systems, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what their politics are per se, but you see that they're given 7 reasons not to participate in the summit. So there is clearly some awareness around this, that this summit is a co-opting of movement, that it's just a green, you know, greenwashing. It's just BS. It's not actually getting anywhere real to making change. But I also still think that it's not going deep enough. I'm just going to show a few more. People who produce most of the world's food continue to fight against agribusiness-led UN Food Summit. And again, this is all coming from, like, nonprofits. This is not mainstream. This is civil society and indigenous people's mechanism. So
when you say you don't feel like it's going deep enough, what do you mean?
Well, I'm going to show that in just a second. Okay. It's not like going to the level that we have, I think, at T-Lab, my work on the Great Reset, other people's, Christian's work on some of the mm-hmm. food systems aspect, because they're telling people that there is a corporate agenda that's attempting to take place. Are they telling those people that it's the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and these folks have a larger agenda? It's called the Great Reset.
Right.
They're attempting to remake the plan. This is why you shouldn't trust the United Nations. We also should question, like, they're not questioning the foundations. In these people's minds,
right,
the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are still positive things. Mm-hmm. They're just doing it wrong.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Right, like, that's right. Kind of like,
so it's almost like a false choice. Like, they're doing this a lot in a lot of these agendas today, where they create the illusion of a counter choice, or an, you know, and then they make it seem like those are the only two choices you can
exactly
have.
Exactly. Like, this is the opposition, but the right. plan's still good. They're
right.
Just doing
right.
it wrong.
Before we get past this being relevant, let me add something that Whitney just shared that I think is really perfect to what we're talking about right now. She said, if you think you're backing a radical agenda that's also backed by Wall Street, predatory multinationals, and the billionaire class, I'm sorry to inform you that you're a pawn, not a revolutionary. And I just thought that, as I said, this is such a very important point in regard to how they keep us feeling like we're affecting change. The two-party illusion is what allows this type of absurdly obvious and naive thinking. How can you be a radical if the establishment is spoon-feeding you the direction? That just seems very relevant to what you're pointing at right now.
That's
100%
what we're talking about.
Right, and so they're creating this illusion that you're fighting against something when you're just picking one choice of a, you know, their choices. It's just such an illusion, like everything else.
And I don't like to police other people's politics. I would hope that at the end of the day, whoever these different organizations that are countering, because I'm glad somebody is countering the Food Summit, right? To me,
right.
This is almost what we are attempting to do with the Greater Reset. Mm-hmm. I wish we had planned ahead to kind of do a counter. But I do know that, like I said, food is so important to people right now. I'm glad these people are countering it. I'm glad they're pushing it. I hope folks like some of the Vandana Shivas and others who question the corporate takeover, but they still fundamentally trust the United Nations or trust these institutions and think that they should be doing what they're doing. This is another example. African faith leaders call on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to drop the African Green Revolution. While we're being told here in the West that it's been the best thing
right.
ever, and that everybody in Africa is doing so great because of groups like AGRA and the Green Revolution that the Rockefellers funded, you actually got, again, over 500 different farming and faith organizations in Africa saying, stay the heck out of here.
Right.
Leave us alone. We got this. Right here, their quotes say, faith leaders are witnessing the negative impact of industrialized farming to the land and in their communities, and have come together in this letter to say to the Gates Foundation, please rethink your approach to farming in Africa.
It's just so sad that this will get no attention. These people will be ignored. The CNNs and Foxes of the world will set the narrative and probably lay it if they need to, that these people are not understanding the reality, or whatever it is. They don't understand the science and they just brush past it. But these are the very people they're pretending they're helping.
Oh, exactly.
It's insane.
And often even beyond that, it's like things that, like, well, they're just poor indigenous farmers. They're clear, right. They don't know, understand the science.
The big
too
picture.
Simple to understand, like,
right.
How, you know, you guys just don't know how politics work or whatever it is, you know. But like you said, the people who really need the help get lost in the mix.
Not even lost in the mix. They get stepped on.
Well, right? Yeah, they get like misrepresented, pretended. Yeah. They'll trot one of them out to be like, hey, here's the farmer we're helping. He's right. An example. And the other farmers are killing themselves or mm-hmm. suffering. So here's another one from Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. Pressure builds on Gates Foundation and AGRA for accountability. This is going back to October 2020. I wanted to show that again. Like, this is what I don't get, is that people who have their ear to this kind of arena clearly know that the Gates Foundation is up to a bunch of fishiness. But while this is going on, October 2020, they're still parading him all over the news mm-hmm. as like the greatest thing out there, the person we should listen to. And he's literally responsible, his foundation at least, let's say, is responsible for a lot of these horrific things happening in Africa. And This just gives more information. There was apparently a July report from last year called False Promises, showing how the AGRA organization from Bill Gates has failed to deliver their promises of yield improvements. There's still high mm-hmm. poverty, high food insecurity, all the things that they're claiming that they have fixed now through organizations like AGRA. So again, the Bill Melinda Gates Foundation is simply picking up where the Rockefeller Foundation continued before them.
Exactly.
Here's a couple other examples. Gates Foundation failing Green Revolution for Africa. New report. This is the one we were just talking about. It's called False Promises. So I'll definitely put all these links. I sent them to Ryan. This mm-hmm. is something to check out because this is the data. Even here, just a couple months ago, July, Bill Gates should stop telling Africans what kind of agriculture Africans need. Agriculture. Right. So that's even like Scientific American. They're super mainstream and they're even willing to kind of say it, which to me goes almost to the point that like, have they thrown Gates under the bus now that he's, mm-hmm. you know, about talking about Epstein and whatever.
Right. Like, I tend to think these kind of articles, and we're seeing this in COVID now too, are meant to, you know, they want the average person who still ends up thinking what the majority of them tell them to think. They want them to feel like there's some kind of a counterbalance. Like, well, they are arguing something different.
Sure.
You know, but the problem is, so they can say this, but this gets no attention.
Sure.
Right. They just skip right over it and they end up going in the same direction anyway. Like, that's what I think. This is the kind of fake, you know, whether the person who wrote this or not realizes that. That's my opinion. But I don't see how you can have an article like this that makes, you know, they're making sound arguments. It's based on the people saying this, and yet they just get ignored.
Yeah, exactly. And this one seems like it might be by some African authors, actually. So maybe they put this out, they put it out there. But like you said, even that they put it out there, good on whoever approved this. But is it going to get traction?
Right.
Is this going to get picked up by CNN or Washington Post? Like, by the way, Africans are warning about this and that. You know, the first paragraph pretty much outlines the situation. Africans have long been told that their agriculture is backwards and should be abandoned for the 21st century version of the Green Revolution that enabled India to feed itself. And that in itself is not accurate. Just right off the first sentence.
Right.
Western science and technology in the form of seeds modified by science and technology, synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, petroleum fueled machinery, that's another part of the whole monopoly, artificial irrigation, were key to that miracle, we are informed, and we too need to tread that path. But they go on to say why they shouldn't go that way.
Hearing that, I don't even know why that sounds good, the modified science seeds and petroleum. It's like, it sounds terrible. Like, you're talking about people that have been doing this their entire lives and they're stepping in and trying to change their direction. And I have to note on the green, this, it's interesting how this has been something that's been before COVID, all the way through it. And don't forget, there's multiple countries around the world that have called their vaccine passports green passes.
Oh, exactly.
And no one's trying to explain that. Like, this is tied together.
I was reading something about that this morning, like, not to get too far off track, but I think that is, as we know, that they're the pre-existing agenda before COVID and the sort of, hey, mm-hmm. now it's time to ramp up the climate talk, right? So
green
could just be another way to link it with that. I thought this was interesting, though. There is a counterbalance that they're at least trying to provide. So maybe this organization, for those who care about this, or even anybody who's in Africa who might hear this, look up the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa. It looks like they're trying to counter what AGRA, the Bill Gates Alliance for Agriculture in Africa, whatever the heck. This one's AFSA, the other one's AGRA. And they say they represent more than 200 million farmers, fishers, pastoralists, indigenous people, women consumers, and others across all five African countries. So this is, again, they're trying to say, hey, we're going to actually be a movement that does represent the people as opposed to the Gates Foundation. And, you know, there's other organizations tied in here. But point is, it is being called out a little bit, right? The next couple that I put together, this is just to provide evidence for what I've been saying, that the Rockefellers are involved in this as well. This is from mm-hmm. the Rockefeller Foundation website, Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. That's AGRA. That's the Gates-funded and Rockefeller-funded organization. And here they are promoting how they're strengthening Africa. So, again, the Rockefellers, they started the Green Revolution. David Rockefeller, they promoted it. They came to Mexico. They came to Africa. They came to India. They touted it as this great thing. And now those same people, Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and if you've read my Bill Gates series for T-Lab, then you've seen the pictures when I've shown that the Gates family and the Rockefeller family have decades-long relationships going right back. So it's no coincidence to me that those are the two driving foundations, because Gates' family grew up with the Rockefellers.
Well, you also find the Rockefeller tie long before all of this, going back to the, you know, like we've talked about, the American Medical Association, the Flexner Report, and the, you know, the time they basically, when they redirected our medical direction into the petrochemical thing. Exactly. Right now, and when was the Green Reset? When was the Green Reset Rockefeller beginning? When did that start?
60s, 70s, like in that, you know, that's when they first started promoting. And this is something that James has covered, and then I'll be covering the Pyramid of Power, right? Because first you had the oil takeover, right?
The
Rockefellers. And then through that, they had petrochemicals they realized that they could use to make all kinds of products, but pharmaceuticals being one of them. Mm-hmm. And that research as well led to genetic engineering research, which led to GMOs. And that's when they started, hey, well, that's this Green Revolution.
Right.
And so they went from oil to big pharma to food. And that's continuing the game that we're dealing with today. This is why the UN Food Summit, to put it back in the context, is so important in relation to the Great Reset, because this is the continuation of the plan they've been doing for decades already.
Yeah, that continuity is really important to understand the full picture, right? From the beginning, whether, I mean, it can go much further back than how and why big
oil.
This
is just the last 50, 60 years of like where we're at now. Here's another one just to kind of, again, show that they're still working on. This is back in April 2019. Rockefellers announced a new partnership to boost food security, one of their favorite words, right, in Africa by use of artificial intelligence. I thought that was interesting too, how they're bringing that in there. So it says through Atlas AI, that might be a rabbit hole if anybody wants to send us any info related to that. Atlas AI, Silicon-based public benefit corporation, of course, that's what they would be, founded in partnership with the Rockefellers in Agra. So they're going to launch AI system. They have a memorandum of understanding. It seems to be the way they do a lot of these things.
Right.
That's what the UN and the WEF did. They signed this agreement saying we're going to collaborate, we're going to work together. And so just a couple of years ago, Agra, which is again funded by the Gates Foundation and the Rockefellers, announcing a partnership with Atlas AI to use AI in some capacity to boost food security. I think that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Right. There is an obvious crossover into the, you know, the technocracy level of this. I don't even understand why they think artificial intelligence could boost the food security. Like, what's the argument there, that it could monitor?
I think it has to be something like that. And I wouldn't even be surprised if it works its way to a blockchain of some sort. Like
right.
I mean, let's even just do a control F and see if there's blockchain on this.
I'm sure there's something like that. It doesn't look like it.
Not on this particular one. But I would be interesting. I'll definitely dive further into that later. And maybe that'll be a separate follow-up piece. I imagine Atlas AI has got some of their own interesting kind of connections. But you're right. It does bring it full circle, which kind of comes back to this article that I wrote a few months back, how smart cities could be the digital prisons of the Great Reset.
Why that image? Brave has been driving me crazy. If you're
not showing up,
the fresh, it'll probably come up, but it's because of the Brave browser. But in any case, that's the one here. That was the one I was showing a moment ago, right? The digital gulag one.
Yep.
Here, let me just grab it on the other page.
Yeah, it's not showing up on mine. But so this article, I published this in March of this year. There you go. And it's all about, it's all about the smart cities particularly, but the one element I want to bring in here, because this is one article where I did dive deeper on what the Agenda 2030 is. So for those who might not be familiar, we're just going to go to a section here, because this deals with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And here you go. So it's part of the smart cities is part of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. They have a list of 11 different goals, and there's a lot of intersecting. I don't want to confuse anybody with like the different agendas going on here, but you got the G20 and the United Nations. They signed an agreement for the Global Smart Cities Alliance, and the World Economic Forum is working with them on that. The United Nations is working with the World Economic Forum on some of the agenda. So a lot of it's just these supranational, transnational organizations that are unelected, WEF, the United Nations, G20, these others that are really driving the force of this. And again, this predates COVID. But now when it comes to the food, where's this section I was looking at? Okay, so they're talking about the future of smart cities. Right here. So the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are a collection of 17 interlinked goals designed to be a blueprint to achieve a better, more sustainable future for all. And that happened in 2015. That's when the United Nations first met and said, okay, these are our goals by 2030. That's where the term, if you guys hear that, Agenda 2030, this is what it's based on. They usually use it the other way. They call it the 2030 agenda, but that's just what we call it for kind of common. And yeah, the smart cities are a part of that. All of that is a part of that. And goal 11 in this article talks about smart cities, but food, I think, is the first SDG, or maybe the second one, because food is so important to them. Mm-hmm. Again, they've used food as a weapon. And in this article, it mainly focuses on how the smart city plays an aspect of it. But I just wanted to point that out for those who are unfamiliar. Again, the United Nations goals are intrinsic to what we're seeing with the Great Reset and what we're seeing with this whole, the whole agenda.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting though, is, and I always want to point this out, is recognize, and I know Derek's been doing this from the beginning, how many of these things, I remember it's obvious to see 2015 forward, well before that, this has been an ongoing plan. Don't miss how COVID or any other agenda has justified a lot of these exact goals that have been laid out long before we ever got here. The smart city thing is being driven in from 1,000 different directions, COVID being one of them, AI being one, China being one. I mean, it's all over the map, but everything leads to the same path.
That's why, to me, and we were kind of chatting about this before we went live, that even if we don't know 100% what is going on with COVID or this particular detail, it's clear to see that there had to have been planning, because if you can... Okay, like you said, you got the smart city agenda, the cashless society agenda, the control of the food, all these different things that predate COVID. And then this one agenda comes along and it checks all those boxes for them. It's like that there's no, that didn't just happen by accident, right? That didn't just happen in that way. So
I agree.
I've got a couple more on here that I'll show, and then we can just chat about this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you guys are enjoying this, because again, you're going to be hearing about the United Nations food summit in the coming weeks. Sure. Oh, yeah, let me share this in the coming weeks as it goes on, because the plans that they laid last week are going to continue to be important into the future. And the other thing that you were sort of saying, this about the Scientific American article, that even if people went the whole last week without hearing about the UN Food Summit, because you pretty much got to be paying attention to the mainstream to hear it, right?
Right.
Most of our crowd probably isn't talking about it except to sort of point and poke holes in it. But if the mainstream even talked about it, they're talking about it as the best thing that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. We got all these great leaders, right? We know that the United Nations and the World Economic Forum have signed an agreement. I'm trying to find that. I want to pull that up to make sure people get that aspect of it. We know that they have decided they're going to collaborate together. They signed the strategic partnership. So you have the agreement between the United Nations and the World Economic Forum. You have Klaus Schwab and the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking at that. You've got, you know, Prince Charles and all these people, right? So people need to understand that when the United Nations gets out there and says they're going to do sustainable development goals for the food and remake this system, it is the Great Reset. That is what we're dealing with. This is June of 2019. So just what, 6-7 months before we would hear the word COVID, the World Economic Forum and the UN signed this strategic partnership, which some people have complained, like, this is going to convert the UN, which is supposed to be this great independent organization. We know it's not. But if that was the goal of it, this is definitely taking it further away from that goal. And as you see here, they signed in a meeting held at UN headquarters in New York between Secretary General Antonio Guterres and Klaus Schwab to accelerate the implementation of the 2030.
Exactly.
It's like right there. Yeah. They're literally saying that the World Economic Forum and the UN are working together to do this. And then they're meeting this week. The whole thing, even though the World Economic Forum, I don't think they had a presence there. I don't think Klaus Schwab was there. But it's being managed by them at this point. Like, it's...
We have to, the public-private partnership is, you know, Whitney's written about that a lot. I mean, this is the, I mean, it seems very obvious to me, but this is sort of the you know, secret way that they're guiding this in. I think it was Professor Michel Chostovsky. He's the one that really kind of laid this out in one of the interviews with Taylor about, he very clearly sees this becoming, whether they name it that or not, like the world government, like it's already established. I mean, the UN, you could have argued, was something similar, but to your point, they tried to remain, or at least ostensibly, to seem like they're not like that. But now they're crossing this line in a very obvious way under the guise that it's good for, this will be the thing we need to make the world stable. But this is becoming an unaccountable situation. Like, who's accountable in this situation? Now we have, you know, multiple world entities creating policy that they trickle down to individual governments. And what happens if we don't agree with this on a world sense? Who's accountable? Who do we go after?
And this, to me, is part, for those who understand, like, the technocratic agenda, like technocracy. The literal definition of that is, you know, it's not democracy, it's not a republic, it's rule by experts, rule by technological elites, rule by scientific. And what are we being told right now? But trust the experts.
Right.
Trust the experts. And the experts are Bill Gates, who has the money and the resources to say, I'm not elected, nobody said I could do this, but I'm going to go block out the sky because it's for climate change, right? Or I'm going to buy up all the farmland so we can plant more GMO food, or what, you know, people need to think about just sort of where it's going, what's happening.
Absolutely.
Here. So I just wanted to put that one in context. Now, here's this, my final little Twitter clip. This is from back in January when the World Economic Forum was actually hosting their Davos Great Reset Summit, just to bring it back so you remember. Look, this was all the leaders of Russia, South Korea, Israel, France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, European Commission, the United Nations, Greta Thunberg, more. They had the whole class in there, for Fauci and Prince Charles and everybody else. This is the Great Reset world agenda. I mean, this is what's going on and what's happening. This is what the World Economic Forum and the United Nations are doing with the food summit. That's really what it's come down to.
Right. So are you actually suggesting that these people got together and discussed a plan for the future in a way that you could call conspiring? Is that possible?
Clearly people don't do that. Everything just happens by coincidence sometimes. Like, it just sort of magically happens. No, I mean, obviously I think there's clear planning here. And I do want to say, for those who are tuned into this, I'm going to be turning all this research into an article for T-Lab. So I just wanted to have this conversation and share it with you guys and Ryan while I'm in town. So those who prefer video can kind of get a download on it. But we are absolutely going to work on a written version of this, where I'm going to be going even deeper, maybe looking up Atlas AI and some of these other pieces of the puzzle here. And I will include one other link there that I think is a worthy read for those who want to share these kinds of topics. Let me see if I can just show that one real quick. Let me see. Do I have it still sharing here? I'm just going to share this last one real quick. This one is from Open Democracy. And I was telling Ryan about this earlier. I mean, the way they phrase this, it's still part of the problem, I think. But it also, the way this one is written, could be a useful tool for quote-unquote normies. So, of course, conspiracy theories aside, none of us are crazy conspiracy theorists. But there's something fishy about the Great Reset. That's kind of like the tone they take for this whole article.
Right.
They pretty much describe the Great Reset, like what it really is. And, okay, it's this marketing campaign. It's this idea to remake the systems. But they're like, it's not about, you know, microchips and the vaccines, or about Bill Gates taking over the world, but it's not a good thing, you know? And so they're sort of straddling the fence. It's like they're telling their people, like, the Great Reset is the plans, the global, this is them making fun of it. The Great Reset's the global elite's plan to instate communist world order by abolishing private property while using COVID to solve overpopulation and enslave what remains of humanity with vaccines. I don't see the lie in that, but that's what they're calling as the conspiracy. You know, it's not like they wrote something saying you'll own nothing and be happy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But, so this person does their best job to, like, distance themselves from those crazy theories. And then, though, they get into there and they say, hey, there is a real problem. Stakeholder capitalism, which is something myself and yourself and plenty of others have talked about. And this is where the plan I was telling you about, as far back as 2010, they've been discussing this. At the time, in 2010, this document called it the Global Redesign Initiative. And I've just been studying. It's a 600-page report all about transforming global governments. I believe, and again, anybody in our team who wants to kind of go do some digging and see what nuggets you pull out of there, maybe let's do a crowdsourced investigation on that, because, and it's linked in this article, we'll share the link, or it'll be in the show notes, but Global Redesign Initiative, released in 2010, describing everything we're seeing now, how to remake global governance. So this is even predating the Great Reset terminology. I looked in there, there's no, but it's called the Global Redesign. Of course, who are the partners? Saudi, Shell, Chevron, BP, Unilever, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Facebook, Google, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, like
all the altruistic people fighting for our freedom.
The people
right?
trying to help save us from COVID. And they get into the whole public-private partnership thing. And I did want to add to that. We were just bringing this up a moment ago. I think, and look, this is not I'm not one of the people who like to throw these conversations around, or these terminology around too much, but what else can we call public-private partnerships? What other term do we have from history that describes the merging of corporate and state power?
Fascism.
Other than fascism. And again, like, that term does get thrown out, you're a fascist, but no, like, think about it in the dictionary definition. In the definition defined by Mussolini himself, the merger of corporate and state power. This is sort of soft steps towards fascism, but they're describing it as public-private partnership.
Right.
It's going to help us bridge the gap between the government and the private sector or whatever.
The biggest illusion for me in that, and that's exactly my mindset on that. I mean, this is, it's not public. There's no public aspect.
Yeah,
of this. You're using things that are they're ostensibly public, but they're groups that aren't public at all. In fact, they're government. It's a government shell game, is how I've described this. And they pretend like, and one of the most important parts is when they do these, you can't FOIA request this stuff. Oh, well, that's their private business.
Oh, exactly. Can't,
you know, and so
there will be no accountability.
Right. You got government that they're claiming is public when they're not. The government is not working for you. And then you got these private entities that are literally just the government at the same point because of the connections around the back, and it's just one big illusion, right? And it is, I mean, I agree with you on that point, and I think that's almost why they create the context or the perception around these words like fascism to become super hyper politicized. So you can't say that word without being associated with a certain political side.
And if you literally are like pointing at fascism, somebody's like, oh, come on. Yeah. Everything's fascist.
Right.
Like, it's like, dude, there are people being exterminated right now. That's not fascism.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts.
Just a couple more quotes here. They say, and again, this is them, this open democracy rightfully calling out some of the parts about it. They says, instead of reforming the multilateral system to deepen democracy, the WEF's vision of multi-stakeholder governance entails further removing democracy by sidelining governments and putting unelected stakeholders, mainly corporations, in their place when it comes to global decision-making. That's 100% right. That's what this is about. Put it bluntly, multi-stakeholder partnerships are public-private partnerships on the global stage, and they have real-world implications for the way our food systems are organized, how big tech is governed, and how our vaccines and medicines are distributed.
And the idea that we're going to pretend that these completely financial-driven entities are going to care at all about what's best or what's right or what's moral at the like and the expense of their profit motive is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so you're giving they're trying to create an era where these corporations are altruistic by nature, and that's just simply not the truth.
Well, and this we've seen just to kind of help people maybe recognize how we got to this point. Well, you got woke Nike. You got woke Coca-Cola, that they care about LGBTQ and they care about Black Lives Matter. And they care. So, of course, they care about climate change.
Right.
Like, these are the corporations we should trust now. Right. And there's a quote here from one of the activists talking again about the United Nations Food Summit, how it's all just been controlled. Abandoning pesticides is not on the table. How come? There's no discussion on land concentration or holding companies accountable for their environmental and labor abuses. And she said they just want to come up with new investment opportunities.
You know, what it really is? It's about this same thing with the carbon tax concept. This has nothing to do with affecting the actual processes of these companies. It's about changing your life, right? In ways that interest them. Carbon tax, I was using an example because what does it amount to? So these companies are going to pay those taxes and keep polluting. You will have to change your life to be able to afford gas because it'll cost more, right? This is the same idea. These companies will not change anything they're doing as they're outlining.
And if they ever get caught doing something bad in this type of situation, there's no accountability. But if you don't take your recycling out on time, your social credit score is going to go down.
Exactly. Right?
So again, more this article, I do think it is if anything, besides the sort of poo-pooing conspiracy theories, it has a wealth of documents mixed in here. This person did some great research, including the one I was showing you earlier, the roadmap for digital cooperation that was published in 2020. Again, guys, this is another document that is I haven't had time to dig into it, but it includes a long list of roundtable participants, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and the World Economic Forum, all working together to outline not only the food system, but your digital future. What does that look like?
God, and why we want Facebook and Google involved in your food system.
Yeah, why would you trust them? And here's another point. I know that Whitney's covered this and you've talked about it, as have I, the COVAX initiative, which of course is coming from the Gates Foundation, where they're like, we're going to work with all the poorest nations to develop vaccines faster. So they note here that why is the World Health Organization, which is part of the UN, not calling the shots? Why is COVAX in charge here? And who is COVAX? Multi-stakeholder group set up by Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and CEPI, Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. You guys who listen here regularly, you know those names and you know their connection to the Gates Foundation. Totally founded and funded by Bill Gates as part of their decade of vaccines in the year 2000. And then we're now at the decade of transformation. So both Gavi and CEPI have strong ties to the World Economic Forum as well as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but they're also connected to Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson through manufacturing partnerships. And they're also listed as supporters. So this is just that web of all the different organizations. And there are some commonalities. Rockefeller money, Gates money, World Economic Forum influence. Like it's all right there. So
being caught lying about many things in their history, right?
And and now people kind of questioning that approach of like, oh wait, did the Green Revolution really produce, like, that narrative is finally thankfully being questioned outside of the mainstream, of course.
But see, you know what's funny though? Again, I argue that's coming back into play again. So we can argue that, oh well, we just simply failed at achieving it, and here's what this one's gonna work. You see how they, you know, and this,
where
that's
this
timed.
Is like, this is the real one. This
yeah,
is the real fix.
Because I argue they wouldn't have allowed any criticism of this action unless they had something else to point to as the solution next.
Yeah.
Right? It's sort of like, you know, I think it was Corbett that just made this point. Like, you know, during the, you know, War on Terror, Bush era, you were not allowed to point out that Halliburton and these groups were doing bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas now it's acceptable. We can point back and be like, oh, they were cheating and lying.
Now that nobody can be held accountable.
Right, exactly. But you can't point to Pfizer in today. You can't. How dare you suggest Pfizer wouldn't be doing things for your best interest? It's always like that until it becomes advantageous for them to, you know, throw them under the bus to jump to the next stone. That's what it feels like.
So, again, I think this is funny. The great article. crappy beginning, crappy end. That's kind of where it comes from, because they bring it back. So even if the World Economic Forum or Bill Gates is not responsible for COVID, even if the vaccines are not laced with microchips to control our thoughts, something fishy really is going on in the realm of global governance. If you value your right to public health, privacy, food access, democratic representation, be wary of the word stakeholder capitalism, which I think is a fair point.
Right.
But it's just funny how they kind of make the point of even in the headline. Conspiracy theories aside, there really is something fishy going on.
I mean, they make great points. My opinion, this is just a cowardly article. Like, they're afraid to step into the main point of it, even though they did a good job. And maybe it's because they don't see it, but I don't think how that's possible. How can you write that all out, right? How can you write out all of the information, walk them through, I mean, literally what we're saying, but then go, oh, but the way they're framing it's conspiracy theory. You just said exactly what we're saying in a different way.
See, and those are the kind of things, though, that are why I want to write this article.
Right.
Because I'm like, okay, well, they're writing it from their perspective. And then I want to send it to them. I'm like, hey, by the way, I appreciate your research. I built on it. Here's a deeper look at those things that you're afraid to look at.
You know? But I bet you they would look at it and be like, oh, but that's conspiracy.
Because yeah, it's you like, framed no, it. You got part of it right, but then the rest is crazy.
Yeah, you have to use the words at a different angle, and then you got it the right way. I mean, I think what it is people at a point today where they have established some framing as a conspiracy theory, and that's just off the table until it's acceptable to do it. Look, we see a lot of the quasi-independent media slowly goose-stepping into this conversation right now, going like, oh, now we're breaking news, when people like you have been covering this from the very beginning. I think it's, you know, that's what's happening right there. Yeah. Is they're finally kind of like, well, I think I can make this. That's brave in their world.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we took a big step.
Right, right, right.
I'll just say the name, The Gray Zone, publishing something that talked about a similar thing. They didn't publish their own articles. It didn't come from Aaron Monte or any of their own team, but they re-aggregated a report from a Latin American activist group, which was cool that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And even in that great report that crew did, it was sort of the same thing. It's like, okay, the Great Reset, this is a part of corporate agenda.
Right, right.
But there's no, like, I don't know. For me, I'm just saying if until people are ready to recognize that there is a eugenics agenda going on, like, it's right. Kind of like, okay, we're not exactly on the same page. Like, because it's one thing to say, oh, there's corporate corruption and mm-hmm. we got to fix that. Usually they're like, oh, we just got to fix the government and we'll fix the corporate corruption. It's like,
and we'll vote next year and that'll do it.
You know? So it's like, all right, you're not really all the way there as far as I'm concerned.
But, I agree.
Yeah, man. And I will be writing a written version of what we just covered. We'll go deeper into some of that. I'm going to do that in the next couple of days while I'm on the road.
Awesome.
And put that out there. And I did see a question or a comment that somebody was asking about the tour, which we're about to talk about. So
let's just jump into that. Honestly, I have to admit that I said ask questions and I stopped paying attention.
Okay. Well, one of them was asking where to find the tour dates. It's not on my website. Somebody said they get my email. It's activationtour.org is the website. Here, I'll pull it up, that we set up specifically for the tour.
I happen to have one of the flyers that we put out right here, but this will be changing as we go forward. But you guys can just take a screenshot of that if you want for the moment. But the whole point is, you know, you're not alone.
Yeah.
That's a big part of this for you know, this whole thing. It's about showing people that they are not the only one out there, right? A lot of people think like you do. You're not alone, you know? But so go ahead, if you want to jump into it and walk us through what it is for those that haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm just going to pop this on mm-hmm. screen. So for those who are unaware, again, activationtour.org. I've been traveling, myself and my partner Miriam have been traveling the U.S. for the last 4 weeks. We're on a little break here visiting Ryan and some other friends. But we're going to be picking up again in early October. We called it the Activation Tour. And as you can see here, I'm giving a brand new presentation that's called This Is What We're Facing and This Is What We Can Do About It. It's all solutions based. Miriam does a short talk about like kind of physical, spiritual, mental preparedness and why things like meditation or just quiet time, prayer, what have you, can be useful. I perform some music. We're doing community action days, volunteering in different cities, park cleanups, beach cleanups, planting trees, urban farming workshops, building lists of businesses that aren't going to discriminate, all kinds of different things. It's been really wonderful. And we got some friends who are joining us, including Ryan. So we just completed the Southwest and West Coast tour, as you guys can see here. And picking up on October 9th, we're hitting the Midwest and East Coast, where we'll be on the road for another couple weeks. So if you're interested and you didn't already miss us on the West Coast, check out activationtour.org, guys. You can see the full schedule. I've been releasing weekly videos. So for those who want to get a little taste of like, oh, what does this actually entail? What's going on? Mm-hmm. You can see some of the highlights from different cities. And Ryan was just showing the flyer. We are going to be in the Nashville area. I don't know if you've said specifically where we're at.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be in Franklin. That's going to be where it's going to be, at, you know, to sub area of Nashville in general. But check out the website he's playing right now or showing right now. The link will be added soon with the actual flyer information. We're still figuring out the location exactly where it's going to be in the action, but it's going to be really anybody out in the general area of Tennessee or close states. Make your way here.
We want this
to be a huge event. It's going to be really fun. Derek's going to be giving a speech. They're going to be playing. I might be giving some kind of speech or possibly playing some kind of music, but we want to have a lot happening and really get, I mean, I would like this to be, you know, 100,000 people. I mean, that's probably not going to happen, but let's go shoot for the stars. And I want to see this completely overtaken the streets. That's what I want
to
see.
I would love to see that as well. So, I mean, what Ryan was just showing on the flyer, you're not alone. I can't stress enough how important that message really is because, you know, I've been hosting meetings and organizing for 12 years now. And that has been the most consistent thing I've heard at every meeting I've ever done, every talk I've ever done, every event I ever attended. There's people who are like, man, they're kind of stepping in. It's the first time they're like, whoa, I didn't realize there's people in my community that care about these things. I thought I was the only one, which is very much, I think, by design. Most of us would recognize that it is. Mm-hmm. They want you to feel alone. They want you to feel like you're isolated. There's only 20% of people who aren't getting this vaccine, supposedly. There's only 15% who are anti-vaxxers. The rest of us all think you're crazy. Clearly, that's not true. And I was kind of sharing with Ryan, as we've been traveling, we're talking with people who consider themselves lifelong Democrats. We're talking about conservative folks. We're talking about nonpartisan people. We're talking with anarchists, libertarians, freedom-minded people, truthers, whatever labels you want to get it, black, brown, white, Asian, from 90 years old all the way down to 5 months old. I mean, the cross-section of society that really is paying attention is so massive. All the BS they're telling us about how you're not, you know, you're the only one or nobody cares, nobody thinks this way. It's just not true. So. As Ryan said, you can kind of see the yellow dates. When you click them, it pops up with flyers about the details of it. We're adding them as we get the info. So if you don't see your city dates listed yet with the info, like for Tennessee, just check back as we get them. We're updating them. And we're going to be visiting cities. Sometimes we're in town for 2 days. Sometimes we're in town for 1 day. But either way, the reason that me and Miriam felt it was important to do this activation tour, I was telling you this, Ryan, that I did these tours a couple years ago, and it was really – an incredibly rewarding opportunity to connect with people on the streets. It was also super exhausting and super, you know, strenuous, but it was so wonderful, right? And in the face of deletion off YouTube, censorship elsewhere, they can't stop a handshake in person, a hug face to face. They can't stop, at least so far, a flyer in the hand, a conversation with the business. You know, are you going to discriminate? Can we talk to you about why we don't want to wear the mask or why we don't want to vaccinate? That face to face interaction is so powerful. And we have had events as small as 8 people, and we've had 150 people show up. And I expect we're going to have a range as we go forward. We would love to have hundreds, if not thousands, of people show up. And activation is not simply just some kind of clever marketing or gimmicky thing we're using. Like, that's what this is about, is we want to come to town and connect with people. We want people to find, like, oh, I didn't realize there were so many activist groups here. I didn't realize that this venue, like, you know, is in my backyard, and I can come here and host events, and they don't care about masks. That's another thing. People are just getting to connect to their community.
Right.
You know, we were at a farm in Kansas City the other day doing our volunteering, and there's a lady saying, I've lived here for 40 years and I never knew this place was here. And that place is like, hey, we're open. If you guys want to bring your activist groups here, you can meet here.
They're like-minded people.
They're running a forest school for kids. And we told them, like, hey, we're going to connect you with the parents who are looking to get their kids out of school. Like, make those connections happen, right? That's what the activation tour is all about. Like, how do we get people activated? I don't claim I got all the answers by any means, but I am proposing solutions. And those are the ones that we've talked about here on T-Lab over the last year or so. You know, things like freedom cells, exiting from the systems. Personally, the Great Reset, the UN Food Summit, all these things, I don't believe we can stop it per se. Like, there's no one computer to smash or one button to press. It's not like the movies. You just throw the ring of power in the lake and it's all good, right? Or destroy the crystal or whatever it is. Like, that's fictional. In reality, the change is going to be generational. It's going to probably involve lifestyle changes, some discomfort, some blood, sweat, and tears, some money probably. Like, realistically, making sure that you are not sucked into the system because of your 401k, your welfare check, your Social Security check, your bank account, whatever. You know, the whole tour is kind of like, we're coming around the country. We're having heart-to-heart conversations with our fellow friends and activists and saying, hey, please think about what's coming.
Right.
Don't just let this arrive at your doorstep without doing anything about it. Because
act now.
We got to act now. We got to get activated, because knowing is not enough anymore. You can know things are getting bad and still sit still and watch it happen.
Right. That's what we were kind of talking about right beforehand, is that, you know, I've always been a huge advocate for what I do in a daily basis, right? We need to continue the information war. We need to continue to fight back against the disinformation, show people that they're caught lying On top of that, however, as you guys have probably clearly picked up on, we have shifted into a real world scenario here. We need to begin to take this to the streets. And I will never, ever argue I do not argue for violence. I think violence begets violence. And that is my mindset. That's why I pulled that back just there. There's obvious times when violence is justified, even for someone in a nonviolent position, you know, being attacked, right? My point is that violence is not the solution for what we're doing. But when I say get out there on the streets, it means doing what we're talking about, bringing information out there, talking to people, shaking hands, hugging people, getting out there in the world. That it's time for that now, you know, and we all need to start doing that. Like, because what Corbett has said, what Derek is saying, what we've all said is that if we just sit back and wait for the next step, we will not be able to take this over. This will continue past us, and then we'll be fighting from within the digital gulag. We need to stop it now.
We don't want things to get to the point of Australia where you're locked in your homes, you're being fined for going out. Oh, in New South Wales, if you've got fully vaccinated, you got 2 hours of recreational time outside now. Like, forget that, right? And that's what I was saying with, like, I don't think we can stop it per se. You know, I'm not going to, you know, tell people not to go fight in different ways, file lawsuits or whatever. But I wouldn't put all your eggs in that basket and assume, like, okay, well, the courts are going to fight it out, or I'll just wait till 2024 or whatever. You know, if you're going to do those things, do that and grow your own food and pull out of big tech and get out of the banking system, because you need to make sure you're not dependent on them, because they've put trillions of dollars into this. They've got generational family planning. You know, that's what it is. It's intergenerational organized crime, basically. That's what these people are. Right. And they've been planning this for generations. So while most of us are just thinking about, oh, what's on Twitter today, Instagram, whatever, these people are thinking about what's their next generation going to be able to achieve after they're dead and gone. And so we have to think in those terms. You know, the solutions I'm promoting in this tour are generational, they're action oriented, they're not political, they're not easy. So I invite everybody to come check out, obviously, in the Tennessee stop. Ryan's going to be giving a talk, I'll be talking, we'll be doing the meditation. We have the Quad Cities in Iowa, we're gonna be joined by Jason Burmis, Philly, Mark Passio, my buddy Justin, and We Are Change at Orlando. He's been doing amazing work. I don't know if you've ever seen any of those guys, man, but they've been recently doing these. Orlando, right? Even in everything's Florida is perfect, right? But Florida, for those who follow my work, I wrote an article last year about how Florida is one of the states that already has passed legislation, you know, sort of under the cover of COVID, that will allow mandatory vaccinations.
I saw that. Once they
decide to go forward, all the infrastructure is there. So everybody feels like, oh, let's go to Florida. We'll see.
You know, what's interesting on that point is it relies on DeSantis. And they're like, well, he's on our side, so they won't use it.
I'm in Texas.
That's never the case.
Everybody's like, oh, Greg Abbott, he just banned vaccine passports. Right. We just got to chill now. Everything, like, that's one thing, right, is people are feeling too comfortable. Don't let yourself get comfortable. Recognize this is not going away, guys, in case you thought that this was like, oh, they just used COVID for a little while. This narrative could go on forever.
It will.
But so, you know, as we're thinking about that, we're talking about solutions. We really want people to just think tangibly about what that looks like and not get caught up and swept in the fear, paralysis, doing nothing, right? Defeatism, oh, it's hopeless, there's no solutions. Or, oh, well, things are kind of normal, let's just accept it, because it should never be normal to see masks on kids. That should never be normal. Right. Like, this is, they've been telling us for the last year and a half, the new normal.
Exactly.
This is it. They want us to be comfortable with this. They want us to be used to this. And so as part of the tour, we will be connecting with other activists who are going to be sharing their ideas. We're going to be connecting with people in the community. We're really just trying to say, guys, like, we have a brief window. I do think we are in a time-sensitive nature. I'm not saying it's coming tomorrow, but again, 2030, that's their agenda. They're just saying it everywhere they can. 2030, right. It is 2021 going on 2022. We don't have a long time to make sure that we are not dependent on their system. So if we can't stop it completely, if we can't avert it, to me, the answer is let's make sure we're not caught up in it, that we don't get swallowed up by it. So we shouldn't allow ourselves to be divided or fighting each other while this is happening. You know?
I agree completely. I think that's a good place to finish off. I think that, you know, what you're talking about is the solution. Like, what's going to happen is they're forcing people into, if we choose to create it, a counter economy, a counter civilization, right? Exactly. Derek was talking about beforehand. It's like, and a lot of people are bringing this up right now. These nurses, these 50% of nurses or more are being fired. Bring them over somewhere else. Somebody else who's got an, I was just watching, I forget the guy's name. He's one of these massive CEOs that has huge companies, lots of money. He's pushing back against this right now, going, why my daughters see this? Why can't you? Take that money that you have, open a new hospital and hire all the nurses that won't, you know, we need to continue to do this and create, or maybe the nurses start their own personal practices. They come house to house. Exactly. I mean, this is how this needs to happen. We need to commit to not being a part of this. And like he said before, this is going to come along with this comfort. You're going to be uncomfortable. There's going to be things that aren't the usual lifestyle you become accustomed to, but this is going to be a choice. You know, are you willing to take comfort and tyranny? or are you going to fight for the freedom that's going to be uncomfortable? That is what the choice comes down to for me. And I think it's important. And go ahead and show that.
I want to mention, just I'll address a couple of the questions. Oh, somebody was saying, it looks like I've missed all the West Coast events anyway for the activation tour. Maybe more in SoCal. So I do want to say this. We're only coming to places where people specifically reached out. And at this point, yes, the schedule's booked. We started out with 10 cities. We ended up with 28. I squeezed in as many as we could. We had to turn down 20 cities, including LA and San Diego, because people just didn't reach out initially. But, you know, those of you who know, I live in Mexico. So we came from Mexico to do this. We're going to go back home after this. I don't anticipate doing it right away. But if the border and things stay open, then I imagine doing this again in 2022 and pretty much until we can't do it anymore. Because I think that, I mean, you'll see this, man, at the event. I know you've been seeing at other recent events that as we're traveling the country, people are so hungry for solutions now. They need this. In some communities, they've already got resources, but they've kind of lulled and things aren't happening. And then this event happens and they're like, oh, everybody's all pumped up again.
Showing you're not alone. Right?
And we're trying to say, all right, guys, now you're excited. Now build from here, right? Yep. Make sure you don't go home without meeting the local activist groups. Make sure you're making those connections. So my point is, if you'd want to reach out to me at intothelight@protonmail.com, I can start making a list of people who would be willing to volunteer for some of the other cities we didn't hit. And we'll see where that goes in the coming year or so. And the last thing I want to say, just because I know I've shared a lot today, is this Friday, guys, if you don't follow my work at theconsciousresistance.com, please do that. But this is another one of my sites. It's thepyramidofpower.net. For those who are aware, I've started releasing the 16-part documentary series, which covers a whole lot of what we cover on a regular basis. But it's done in a way that's meant to be really palatable to your friends who aren't going to watch a four-hour video or even a 50-minute video or, you know, a 30-minute video. I try to make these 20 to 25 minutes in length. Including like full exposition of the topic, big education, establishment media, big tech, whatever, but also provide some solutions. Each chapter ends with, if you want to go further, watch this book, watch this documentary, read this book, and it references your work, James' work, and other people. We released season one in May, and it has 4 episodes. This Friday, beginning this Friday, October 1st, we're going to be starting to release season 2. So every Friday this month at thepyramidofpower.net and theconsciousresistance.com, Friday nights, we'll release the new episode. The next 4 episodes are Big Wireless, Big Oil, Big Pharma, and then the Food as a Weapon, which kind of covers a lot of what we're talking about today. So as you can see, like, I'm pretty much trying to start super 101, the education system, the media, and each season is going to progressively get deeper. The next ones, we're going to start getting into false flags. By the end of it, we're going to be talking about child trafficking and some of the deeper stuff. But I did it in a way that this is the exact opposite of the way Alex Jones tries to make his documentaries, for example, sort of doom porn, kind of intense, like scary, not to say not factual, but very not going to be open. Like, your average friend is not going to want to watch something like that. That's just going to scare them. Instead, I made it for the Netflix generation. It's meant to be bingeable, watchable. So ideally when we get all 16, somebody like watches one, like, oh, that's pretty interesting. 20 minutes of my time, not a big deal. I'll go to the next one.
Right.
And hopefully by the end of 16, people's minds are totally open and they're ready to focus on solutions. So yeah, we're premiering that this Friday and I'm excited to share it with you guys.
My guess is people who will sit down and be like, oh, good, 20 minutes, because I don't have an hour, and then sit there for an hour and a half and watch 20-minute version. That's
there you go.
My show is the clips. They suddenly have an hour of time. But give me your email address one more time. Sure. It looks like they missed it.
Into the light, all one word, intothelight@protonmail.com. I'm not going to be using Proton Mail too much longer. Well, that's a whole other topic, but you can reach me there right now.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me, Derek. It's a fun adventure to figure out how we're going to make this room work, but we'll get there. We'll get there one way or another. But thank you all for joining us today and this impromptu live stream. I thought it was really nice to connect in person with Derek and actually meet him. This is the first time I've actually met in person.
Yeah,
you know,
been working together for a while. And it's always good to make the face to face.
Exactly. I mean, that's the world that they're creating, right? Is that we feel like we have personal connection when we don't, and we have to make sure we don't allow ourselves to feel that way. We need personal connection. That is what life is all about. So thank you all for joining us today. More to come. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.